Today's opening tip, Fred Van Vliet setting a Raptors franchise record with 54 points last night. We haven't seen him this hot since his son was born. So, Richard, what got into Van Vliet last night? Did he have another kid? What's happening? Richard is stunned into silence. That might be the only time in the history of television that Richard Jefferson has not had anything to say. Welcome to The Jump. I am Rachel Nichols, joined by, indeed, NBA champ Richard Jefferson, two-time WNBA All-Star, co-host of the Chiney and Golic Jr. show on ESPN Radio, Chinea Agumake. Her microphone is working, just saying. That's all. Coming up in this show,
we're here.
How much do the early season struggles of Anthony Davis matter? Dave McMenamin is going to join us to discuss that a little later on. First, though, you know the Oprah Winfrey meme? You get a car, and you get a car, and you get a car. That's what a lot of Nets basketball has felt like since the James Harden trade, and not just for KD, Kyrie, and James, who have proved positively lethal together offensively. But really for anyone on court with them, Bradley Beal, Colin Sexton, Bam Adebayo, you get a basket, you get a basket, you get a basket. All of which only ramped up the anticipation going into last night's game between Brooklyn and the Clippers. Kawhi Leonard and Paul George have both been on a tear this season and certainly capable of matching the Nets' firepower while also remaining two of the best lockdown defenders in the league. Is this where the Nets' bounty would finally run out? Would Oprah abandon them? The short answer? Nope. Kyrie scored 39 as Brooklyn beat LA, with the Nets showing off some improving late game execution and a little trickeration to boot. Hers first Kyrie, then Harden, then KD, and all three of these shots hit over Nick Batum, who, yeah, had a rough fourth quarter. Now, Marcus Morris would help the Clips answer with a three-point play. And then we got PG. Take a look at this knockdown dazzler. But it wasn't enough. With just seven on the clock, Kawhi shooting his free throws, you can see coach Steve Nash telling Jeff Green, leak toward the basket. By the time LA realizes what's going on, Harden had thrown the Wes Unseld outlet, Green converts, and yeah, that's the ball game. Sorry, Reggie Jackson, you're not going to make it in time. And the Nets win. But again, that's the short answer. If you want to take a longer, more deep dive, go back to the second quarter when it was the Clippers who were up 11 and the Nets who called timeout. During the break, you could see several of the players having intense conversations, discussions that KD would later reveal had to do with team defense and how some of the Nets were overhelping, leaving the three-point line vulnerable. Brooklyn came out of that timeout and promptly went on a 12-2 run, proving that when this team wants to drill down and focus defensively, they're capable of it. Or how about the three-minute stretch of the fourth quarter? The Nets held the Clippers scoreless. You can watch Harden on Lou Will. You can watch Harden on Kawhi. You can watch Brooklyn as a whole forcing the best three-point shooting team in the league into taking tough shots that just did not fall. And this was serious progress for the Nets. And you could tell after the game that they knew it.
It wasn't nothing easy, I'll tell you that. I think they earned every point late in the game, and that's what we want at the end of the day.
It's going to be on the defensive end. Offensively, we're one of the best teams that, you know, in this league. You know, this can be manned up and get stops individually. And then, you know, as you know, our principals, can we have each other's back on a consistent basis? We'll keep cleaning up. We'll keep getting better. But when they put forth the effort like they did tonight, it will be tough to beat.
In fact, Kyrie Irving was feeling good enough about what this game indicated long term for the Nets that he said this.
You know, we know that they're in contention for, you know, meeting us down the line. So we wanted to come out and make an impression. I felt like we did that.
Can't knock the confidence. And look, Kyrie is not saying there that the Nets are finals ready now. This is one game, a game in which the Clippers did not have one of their better defenders in Patrick Beverley, a game in which Paul George would later complain he wasn't getting enough respect from the officials, who only awarded him one trip to the free throw line. But it was also a game in which the Nets proved to themselves that, yes, they may be Oprah Winfrey on offense. But defensively, they can be something at least a little bit closer to Samuel L. Jackson in Pulp Fiction. You know, and I will strike down upon thee with great vengeance and furious anger those who attempt to poison and destroy my brothers. Yeah, that would be quite a combo if they can get more consistent at pulling it off. Richard, I know that my Samuel L. Jackson impression is so fantastic, you can barely speak after that, but try. Did that win over the Clippers last night change your opinion of the Nets defense at all?
No, I wouldn't say that it was anything about changing my opinion. You know, we know that there are capable defenders. There are people, there's a difference between not defending and being, and really not having the ability, and then being capable. Kevin Durant is a capable defender. You look at James Harden, he has improved his defense considering that it was such a criticism of him the last like 2 or 3 years. He's actually improved. And Kyrie Irving is a type of defender that can give you moments, if not long moments and stretches of quality defense, but it's the team defense. You don't have to be great individual defenders if you can be a good team defensive group. And I think that's one of the conversations that they said that they were having. And it's true. If they're a solid team defense, then it takes stress off of people being individual defenders.
Yeah, and that makes sense. You know, it really did, that game changed my opinion of this Brooklyn Nets team, because the Nets knew that this was a big game versus the Clippers. And you know what that means? We got maximum effort from all of them. They were hustling all over the floor, getting out in transition. Obviously, their defense still needs work. But what I actually have really noticed over the last few games was that they're really starting to establish roles. We all know that KD, Kevin Durant, is going to go out there and get his 15 to 20 shots and be a bucket. Kyrie is going to go and take over when rolling late in games. And now we're hearing a lot, and I don't know if you guys caught this, a lot about James Harden, the playmaker. Oh, he's a playmaker. Something he seems really comfortable being now with Brooklyn. Not in Houston, but it's all good. I digress. Which a lot of people at first were nervous about. Will he be okay with being that guy for this team to win? Now, James Harden, he messed around and got a triple-double. He's leading the league in assists. I think 11. The next close guy is Russell Westbrook with 9. As long as those three play hard on both ends, I think that they're going to be just fine, because they have enough veteran savvy defensively to be able to cover those blind spots.
I like that. You can take the girl out of Houston, but you can't take the Houston out of the girl, our Texas native, Chinee. And look, I do think the fact that Harden has adjusted the way he said he would, but people were asking questions, did he really mean it? I think that has been so huge for them. I agree. Now, as for the Clipper side of things, I did mention at the top there, All-Star Paul George attempting just one free throw last night, a season low for him. And after the game, he voiced his displeasure with that. Take a listen.
I absolutely think it was disrespectful. I had one free throw attempt today. I'm going to leave it at that. But the amount of plays I initiated or created contact and to get sent to the line one time, definitely plays I'm going to have sent in.
It's funny, Chinee, when we talk about stars getting calls, you have a court with 5 huge all-stars on it, but do you think PG has a legit gripe there?
Okay, so time for us to nerd out. You know I love to do that, Nerd Nation. Now, statistically, Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, they pretty much had the same game. Points, field goal attempts, assists, and rebounds. But the difference is that, obviously, Paul George, you know, only had one free throw to Kawhi's 9. And I feel like right now we really need to put some respect collectively as an NBA family back on Paul George for a moment here, y'all, because what he's been doing this season has been great. And I'm going to include the referees, too. He should get the benefit of the doubt, because he's shooting, 45% from 3. He's shooting, I think, making like 4 threes a game, on pace for a 50-40-90 season. So right now I am giving him the benefit of the doubt. Of course, you know, as an athlete, we always, you know, should get the foul calls. But I do think that one free throw is very different, you know, compared to Kawhi, who had 9. This guy mixes it up in the paint, so I see why he was mad.
Yeah, I agree, Chinee. I think, you know, the point that you make, Rachel, is like, yo, there's 5 all-stars on that court. So if he's driving against Kevin Durant and you want respect on your name, well, Kevin Durant has respect on his name also. So, you know, when you look at this, I think Paul George is having a great season. He has, you know, regardless of all the conversation this summer, how their season ended last year, I think he's having a very, very good season. He's doing a great job for the Clippers. But ultimately, if you get so battled up in this free throw stuff, and I think he said it the right way. He was like, yo, I feel like it's disrespectful to shoot one free throw given the amount that I attack, the amount that I, you know, how aggressive I am. that is the best way for you to save. You're not pointing out, you're not cussing, you're not saying all this stuff, you're just saying, I feel like it's disrespectful, I attack way too much. And everyone looks around and like, well, yeah, he does play 39 minutes and attack way too much to shoot one free throw. Just statistically, that's almost impossible.
Although, Richard, you've had experience arguing with officials before. How does it usually go when a player argues with an official or argues about not getting enough fouls?
Well, I think that's what I said. I think he did it the right way. I think he did it the right way right there. I doubt it he's going to get fined. I doubt it, but I think you go back and you look at the film, and I think after the game, it's always about emotion. And then you go back and you look at the film and you're like, okay, was there four or five calls? We're not sitting here talking about that should have been a foul on Paul George in the final 2 minutes of the game. We're not saying any of that. We're just saying that, like, over the course of the game, he should have shot more free throws. But you got to go back and watch the game and say, okay, there's three or four times there where they legitimately missed the call. And I just don't know. I think a lot of them were judgment calls and the judgments just didn't go his way that night. But given who he is and given how much he attacks, you would imagine that there should be more than one free throw under his belt.
Well, we'll see what happens in the next game for sure. All right, guys, coming up, we'll listen to what Fred VanVleet had to say after that incredible night last night, reflecting on what it means to shoot a 50-piece for the Raptors. I want to circle back on the incredible performance that Fred VanVleet guys had last night in Orlando. Broke DeMar DeRozan's Raptors scoring record of 52. That was set back in 2018. VanVleet dropped 54 points. Also the most points scored ever by an undrafted player in NBA history, according to Elias. He hit 11 of his first 12 three-pointers, 9-for-9 from the line for the game. Afterward, Fred said he was more concerned about winning than scoring. What you want to hear, right?
It was easy. No disrespect to the Magic, but I mean, for most of those, I was open. They were in rhythm. They were clean looks. They were within the offense, and that's why I was able to remain patient and still pass out of double teams and not take bad shots, because the way I got all my points, I wanted to win more than I wanted 50 points. So, you know, just trying to continue to play with a pure heart and let the game come to me, and you know, I was rewarded for that.
So, Shanae, you're in Orlando right now. You were in the building last night. What was it like sitting there in real time watching Fred VanVleet do all this?
It was so much fun. I'm sorry, Becky Bonner, my girl, my Stanford sis, who hooked me up with the tickets yesterday. But, you know, watching this game, it was over time. You just started seeing, I'm like, okay, he's hot. Look up. All right, 20 points. He hit another couple. Oh my gosh, he's already up 40. And it's crazy because I feel like his story, what, he's a 6-foot guard out of Wichita State. He plays with that edge. And now the league is starting to maybe realize, especially after this game, how good his talent is. It's not tied to that one playoff run that amounted in the Raptors' first championship. He's legit. But it sort of seems like people still don't really guard him or send that crazy energy that he demands, because he has been at least that game, he had been a sniper. But this season for the Raptors, he's been a sniper, leads them in scoring 20 points per game. So it was fun to watch. I felt bad considering I was there, in honor of the Magic. But I feel like by the end of the game, everyone was really celebrating his achievement, because he's a guy you can root for.
The only thing I heard is, with all due respect, they were open and good jobs.
It's like, with all due respect,
you're an idiot. You can't just say with all due respect and say whatever you want after that. You can't do that. That's pure Ricky Bobby. We got to understand. When you say, well, with all due respect to the Magic, I was dead open on every single shot, and they were in rhythm, and they were pretty easy. Jeez, I wish I could play against, with all due respect, I wish I could play against the Magic every night. You can't say that. But after you get past that, look, he wasn't lying. And look, his story is more of a story that you should hear than the number one picks that go on to be great, because that's expected, right? Comes from a small school, has won a G League championship, went through the G League, spent time developing these games. All these first round picks that rather sit on the bench than go to the G League and work on their game. Look at the individuals that have worked on their game and have improved with reps. Your process will go a lot quicker if you just focus on playing and getting better. I am a huge fan of Fred.
Well, Fred's tagline is bet on yourself, right? He has that on his clothing line and everything else. He's a guy who knew that he might end up at the very end of the draft. His agent put out the word to teams, you know what, this guy, don't draft him. He'd rather be an undrafted free agent, take his chances, see where he goes. He ended up signing in Toronto. The rest is history, and that huge, huge deal in the offseason. Bet on yourself, people. All right, guys, coming up next, we're going to play the stat market. Should we buy or sell Giannis's free throw struggles this season? We will check back in. We've covered this throughout the season on the show. Career worst, 59%. First, though, in honor of Black History Month, we remember the late, great John Thompson.
Lift every voice.
On April 2nd, 1984, John Thompson's Georgetown Hoyas, led by Patrick Ewing, beat Houston in the NCAA championship game, making Thompson the first Black coach to win an NCAA basketball title. Thompson became a coaching icon during his 27 years at Georgetown. When he passed away in 2020, several coaches honored him by wearing his signature white towel.
Guys, welcome back to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols, still hanging out with Richard Jefferson, Chinne Ogumike. It is time, friends, for us to dig into some numbers, so you know what that means. Oh, yes, it is the stat market opening bell. We give you the stats. You buy or sell whether the trends will continue. First up, MVP Giannis Antetokounmpo, who is struggling from the free throw line this season, averaging a career worst 59%, his career high 77%. He was 70. Two seasons ago, when he won his first MVP, it has gone down since there. Richard, do you buy or sell these struggles from the charity stripe continuing through this season?
I'm going to buy it. Ultimately, I think he will improve. I don't know if he's going. I don't think he's going to go down, but I think he's still going to end up with a career worst, mainly because, you know, I think the pressure is starting to mount. And look, there's no fans in stadiums. You're not traveling as much. You're a little bit less fatigued. So it's like all of these things should mean your body's fresher. You're more familiar because you're playing like two games in one arena, right? You know, against the same team. So I just think he's going to continue to struggle. But, you know, ultimately, that's why there are question marks about whether the Bucks can finish. Look, he had a game where he was 1-for-10 or 1-for-9. Like, that's absurd. Like, that for a guy of that caliber that works as hard as he is, that's more mental than it is physical.
Exactly. I agree. That is highlighting the mental aspect, especially when it comes to the free throw line. And for that reason, I'm going to continue to sell this because I feel like we all sort of bear a little bit of responsibility when it comes to Giannis Antetokounmpo and his, you know, shooting percentages. Just because, like, I think we tend to think about what he should be, not what he actually is in this moment. We all know that he's a freak athlete with good handles that cannot be stopped in the paint and can hit occasionally, you know, that mid-range that's working on his free throws. But we all know that he will give you 30 points a night, you know, whether it is attacking the rim or just getting it in transition. And so I feel like the expectations and the conversations and are sort of forcing him to play this mental game that's probably not his best versus appreciating what he actually does well. And that's just getting to the rim and scoring and improving his game over time.
But today, who he is, at least for a while, was a 70-something percent free throw shooter. So we know that that's not looking for him to be something he can't be. It's looking for him to be what he was just a few years ago.
Okay, your girl, when I started at Stanford, I think I was like a 60% free throw shooter. So I've been through the works. Your girl is now at 80% and working her way up. So some seasons it's hard. Some seasons it's you know, it's easier. But this is one of those things where I think this season it just maybe has gotten into his head and we feel like he'll get back to at least better than average. And that's not what we're seeing right now.
You're giving her that stink eye, Richard. Come on. She's improving.
No, well, my only thing about it is, like, when you talk about bearing the responsibility, I hear you and I understand what you're saying, but part of being a professional athlete, as you know, is tuning out all the noise. Don't listen to what everybody else is saying. His free throw line, his free throw percentage was something that was a compliment to his game because he was such a great paint attacker, one of the best guys in the paint, was amazing in transition, and he knocked down his free throws. That was like, wow. Like he's Shaq with that, that can knock down free throws, but he has digressed. And sometimes it is like we talked about, it's always about the mental aspect of the game. He should not be regressing and going backwards, you know, on his free throw percentage. And I think some of it has to do with
the struggle.
No one is immune to the struggle, and everyone is like, yo, the only thing that is going to stop you guys from winning your championship is the ability to either shoot outside shots or knock down free throws. And his jumper is not progressing the way he would like, and it's starting to affect his free throws from a mental aspect. that's really just the cold hard truth.
Well, let's move on, guys, because we want to talk Zion Williamson, also dominating in the paint. In fact, he's averaging 17.9 points per game in the paint this season. That is on pace to be the highest of anybody over the past 15 years. Chinee, do you buy or sell Zion sustaining this pace?
I am buying this, all of it. Like, whatever GameStop was happening a week, you know, when it was all good, like, that's the same type of thing that I'm buying.
You get that energy.
Now, again, like you said, Rach, for sure, leading the league in points per game when it comes to the paint. He has the highest field goal percentage by any NBA player by, like, a long shot. And he's just now figuring out the game. Again, this could potentially be an extension of his rookie season where he only played 30-plus games. He's still figuring it out. But one thing he knows is if it ain't broke, you don't need to fix it. He's going to get to the rim at will. He's a guy you don't have to run plays for. That's a beauty. That's heaven for a coach. And what does he do? He gets those touches. He gets those deflections. He gets extra possessions, and he finishes at the rim. And I feel like that's what he's known for, and that's what he's going to stick to.
No, I agree, Chinee. I think the funny thing is, like, when you look at players like Ben Simmons, when you look at players like Giannis, everyone focuses on what they need to improve on. Well, right now, Zion is in that phase where it's just like, hey, go play your game. Go figure out your game. We're not going to critique you on whether your three-point percentage or just go play. And he's dominating in the paint. You go look at Giannis's MVP years, dominant in the paint. So I think I am 100% buying, because Zion has little to no pressure other than being the number one pick and all that. He has no pressure to go prove that he can do something else, because everyone just wants to see what he's capable of doing before him trying to prove what he can do. Oh, I can shoot jumpers. I can do this. I can do that. Right now, it's like, hey,
like,
you want to go and
Giannis.
Score 18 points in the paint? Do it every night. Yeah, learn.
All right, guys, let's get to the Phoenix Suns as well. They are winning this season and doing so with defense. As you can see, they defend the three really well. They rank in the top five overall in defensive efficiency. Richard, do you buy or sell the Suns as a top five defense for the rest of the season?
I'm going to sell, but I don't think they're going to drop out of the top 10. I think, you know, the fact that they are a top 10 defensive team, the fact that they're right now, like, a couple months in at number five, means that's kind of who they are, right? Do I think they'll maintain being a top five defensive team? I think that'll be tough, but if they drop to seven, if they drop to eight, I think that they're still a playoff team. And I think that's a compliment to the coaching staff. I think that's a compliment to what Chris Paul has done, and also all the young players that are listening to all of the defensive responsibilities and making sure that they do it every single night, because that's what a top five, top 10 defensive team does. They bring it every night.
And Rach, I'm a high-risk, high-reward investor. Ooh. And so, therefore, I'm going to buy into this, because I feel like, based on the talent level right now in the NBA, which is so deep, we've got Brooklyn, we've got LA's plural, we've got Philly, we've got Milwaukee, to compete, which Chris Paul wants to do. That's why he made this move there, to compete with that type of top-tier talent. I feel like the Phoenix Suns, they will need their defense as their edge. Chris Paul, seven-time all-defensive team type of player. You now have that rim protector in Ayton, and you have a lot of switchable wings. If I am, you know, coaching that squad, Monty Williams, I'm telling them, defense is our bread and butter, and then we will let our chemistry build, and we will compete through, you know, leading, you know, with Chris Paul at our point guard position.
Well, you're making our researcher, Michael Schwartz, extremely happy, Chinee. He is a diehard Suns fan. This season, it's been a decade since they've been in the playoffs, people. This season is all he has. So thank you for buying on that just for him. Chinee has to get to her radio show. Thank you so much, my friend, for joining us today. And that is the closing bell, meaning the stat market is done for the day. We will be back with another edition soon. Coming up, Richard's going to stick with me. Anthony Davis's scoring has taken a slight dip so far this season. Does his slower start matter? Our Lakers reporter, Dave McMenamin, is going to be joining us to discuss. First, though, here is what the Jump recommends for today. Chris Bosch has a new book entitled Letters to a Young Athlete, coming out on June 1st. The two-time champ, 11-time All-Star, reflecting on finding his purpose after basketball was suddenly taken away from him. The book, not just for athletes, anyone looking for advice on how to achieve excellence. And I'm telling you about it now, because you can pre-order it starting today. This is going to be really great. Check it. All right, guys, welcome back to The Jump. We've got Dave McMenamin in the house. Well, he's in his house. No one can be in our house right now, but we're trying, people. Dave, tell us what you've noticed about Anthony Davis over the first quarter of this regular season.
Well, listen, Rachel, when statistics, he's down in scoring, 3.8 points less this year than last year. If you look at all the 20 in the top 10 in terms of points going down, rebounds are down, blocks are down. He's not playing as well as we're accustomed to. You'd think this would be a year of ascension for him coming off the championship, getting that $1 million extension. To me, it's more of either a plateau or a recession. And the question is, be concerned? Or is this a guy who recognizes that it's all about postseason performance so he doesn't have to worry about
Richard, are you concerned about AD's slower start?
No, I'm not, because, you know, when you go through that long run and you run a championship, I'm not saying that players coast the next year, but oftentimes you will see guys kind of build up, right? Just before LeBron had that monstrous game about a week or two ago, he was averaging like 22 points a game, just under 23 a game. And I was like, dude, what's going on? You're not going to average 25 this year? Mm. And then slowly but surely he's been picking it up over the last couple of weeks. And so I think a lot of times when you had such a short off season, guys aren't looking to start off the first 30, 40 games just banging their body, being super aggressive. They want to build into it. I always notice, even playing with Bron, he posts up more as the season progresses and as he gets into the postseason. Doesn't post up nearly as much in the first third of the season to kind of conserve some of the wear and tear on his body. So I'm not concerned. I always look at their record, how their offense is and how their defense is, and the Lakers' offense, team defense, all of that stuff is moving in the right direction. So I'm less concerned with AD's individual stats.
Well, there's been some question about how much he's deferring a little bit to try to involve some of his new teammates. Right? I mean, his shot attempts even are down. But the new lineups, they're interesting. The Lakers played something in crunch time against the Hawks that was pretty cool. LeBron, Trez, Caruso, Kuz, and Talen Horton-Tucker, Dave. What do you think of that lineup and what we will see of it going forward?
Yeah, Rachel,
well,
first of all, we've got to,
you know, again,
Dave speak, Richard, come on.
Oh, my bad.
Dave,
I'm sorry. I thought
Richard.
You were still. Dave's back. My bad.
Were you not paying attention? Were you just going and liking those Instagram photos of our girl?
I have not. I have not paid attention at all.
It's been years.
Lineups only played 32 minutes together. Defensive lineup in the NBA this season in terms of point differential. And we got to come up with a nickname, maybe the D5, because that group together are so potent defensively. They're able to defensive deflections their end because LeBron is a guy who's a freight train when he's in transition. And so that's a group that Frank Vogel has unearthed. Wes Matthews and Markieff Morris, a really tough decision for a coach to take two guys who had other offers on the free agency market this past summer, who came to LA to try to be part of a repeat championship group, and recognize that sometimes by not playing those guys.
Richard, now, Dave's frozen into silence, so go ahead, my friend, please.
Oh, I can talk now? I'm allowed to talk? Okay, my bad.
If it were up to me, you'd be talking this entire hour. But
No. I'm just giving Dave a little bit of mess. Ultimately, I think, you know, we talk about this so much with all the teams in the league. The first third of the season, it's all about figuring out who your new players are, how that you can, you know, get them in the system, how they're acclimating to the system. I love it when you see coaches find these random defensive lineups that can work. I think that gives, you know, the coach another opportunity to be like, hey, if we're playing against a really small team, or if we're down 15 to start the second half, like, what can I do to pick up our defense? Certain things. And because when you look around this league, there are some very potent offensive teams that you could potentially go against. And so you want to be able to have very, very good defensive lineups. And shout out to Frank Vogel and his staff for finding a very, very good one.
Well, this was one of the reasons we love the offseason that the Lakers had so much. It just, they gave themselves more dexterity, right? And you saw the offensive numbers drop when they have those guys on the floor, but the ability to put in lineups that can match the situation. I think the Lakers have more of that than they did even their championship season last season, which makes them very dangerous. All right, up next, we're going to preview tonight's matchup between the Hawks and the Mavericks. Should we expect to see fireworks from Luka Doncic and Trae Young? It's crunch time here on The Jump. Tonight, two dynamic rookies will be in action. Charlotte's LaMelo Ball against the Sixers and the Kings' Tyrese Haliburton against the Celtics. Haliburton and Ball both named January's Rookie of the Month from their respective conferences, so could be a very competitive race for Rookie of the Year, guys. Richard, who do you think has the inside track right now?
I would say Ball has the track, to me, in my opinion. I think Haliburton has been special. I was quite critical of the Sacramento squad early on, but he has been very, very impressive. Actually talking to some people in the organization, you know, and they think that eventually Haliburton can be their starting point guard, and then you would have De'Aaron Fox be their two guard, and that looks pretty solid.
Dave, I like how Richard says talking to people in the organization, like we don't know his college roommate. Luke Walton is the coach of the team, but sure, fine, yeah. Your sources, Richard.
It was actually Harrison Barnes.
Aw, look at that. You can name check him.
I don't like to agree with Richard, but I'm with you here. The LaMelo is the clear front runner here. He's now on the starting lineup for Charlotte, even though both teams are around 500. Rookie of the Year's never really been about team success. It's individual statistics. LaMelo already has an edge in that category. I think they're only going to grow.
And going to be great to see. I would love a competitive race here for sure. All right, guys, the Boston Celtics stopping a two-game losing streak with the win last night in Golden State. Boston dropping to fourth in the Eastern Conference. They're now 5-5 in their last 10 games. Richard, do you think they're back on track with this win, or do you think the fact Marcus Smart is going to be out for a little while, they're still going to be a little shaky these next week or two?
I think the Boston Celtics are going to be just fine. I think getting Marcus Smart is obviously key to their long-term success. But I think right now they have more than enough to be successful throughout this rest of the season.
There's a big minutes from Grant Williams in that Warriors game. We just saw him hit some threes on the screen there. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Kemba Walker still working his way back into lineup. He had that 1-for-12 shooting night against the Lakers. But he said that he wants to be able to fit in where he gets in and allow Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum to continue their success. I see Celtics as one of the two teams that could actually give the Nets a run for their money in the playoffs, them and Philly.
Yeah, I mean, look, long defenders, right? I mean, that's kind of what it's all going to be about now in the Eastern Conference. All right, I want to get, though, to this League Pass game of the night. There's a lot of games on the NBA slate, friends, but our producers went with Mavericks at Hawks, 7:30 Eastern. 4-10 games. But Luka and the Mavs in Atlanta taking on Trae Young and the Hawks. So much more than the old Luka versus Trae storyline. That's the 2018 draft. We can put that to bed now. We know who both of these players are. Let's talk more about the teams, because the Mavs started the year with high expectations. They have been free-falling in the West playoff standings, gentlemen. Six-game losing streak they're on. Remember last week we heard Luka make interesting public comments, questioning his team's desire to win. Meanwhile, the Hawks, sixth in the East, looking to bounce back from that loss to the Lakers that you covered, Dave. What are your expectations for this game tonight, Dave?
You know, you would say the Mavericks could think this would be a game they can get back on track. It's a 500 team in the East, a young team that hasn't figured out winning yet. But I think there's going to be another tough one for Dallas. You know, right now, they're playing with such camaraderie. I watched them play the Lakers the other night, and you saw guys playing with purpose. Trae Young, there was some chatter earlier in the year that John Collins didn't really like the way he was fitting in with that group. But right now, they are a group with purpose, and I think this is going to be a tough one for the Mavericks.
What do you got, Richard?
Well, I think this game is just going to be fun, to tell you the truth. There's very few regular season games that you can kind of look at and say, hey, this is one that you really want to tune in because of the matchups. Obviously, the Dallas Mavericks have kind of underachieved, and greatness is hard. It's very hard to do it over long periods of time. Do I think they're going to be fine with Luka and Porzingis and that crew? Yes. But I think the Atlanta Hawks have a very good opportunity. When a team is struggling, the number one goal for you is to keep them struggling.
Yeah, and look, the Mavericks have lost a couple of those games lately, really close, that last second finish to the Suns. But as Yogi Berra once said, it's getting late early for that team. They're not even, not just in playoff contention, they're not even in play-in game contention yet. They got to get back there.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.